Hello, Mixed Nut Cases. Okay. This is Nuke Joss, and I've got another nutty chat for you today for the dog days of podcasting. With me today, I have got Patrick. Hello, Patrick.
Hello.
And you've not been on the podcast before, so why don't you tell everybody who you are, where you're from, all the crazy projects that you do, and you do a lot, so I know I would forget things.
I have so many projects, none of which are finished. It's amazing. let's see now. My main web portal is thousandheads.com, which is like my blog / central repository for whatever crazy thing I'm working on. Right now I'm doing interactive fiction and an anthology weird project. I was a New Media Balticon person for a while, like the person who ran it, but that stopped this year. And so I've been trying to figure out what I'm going to do with all of that freed up time. I ran a podcast for a while, but it's on hiatus because it was a musical and I had to take a break because of carpal tunnel syndrome. I played all the instruments, so.
That's ambitious.
I was stupid ambitious. I was releasing on a weekly schedule, okay?
And you weren't done.
The book is finished. The book is finished. The writing was finished. The editing was mostly finished. What I did, my entry into podcasting was I was like, this is back when Podiobooks was doing weekly releases. They were still okay with unfinished podcasts going up. So every week I would write the music, which is easy for me, and record it. And it'd be very kind of this weird kind of like 30-minute folk song for the story. And then I had a really bad carpal tunnel syndrome thing. And so, yay.
Carpal tunnel is like one of my biggest fears. Because while I'm not a musician, I make my living with my hands. I am an artist and I'm constantly on the computer. I'm on the computer for my day job. I'm on the computer for the stuff I like to do for fun. I'm on the computer for everything. So several years ago, I forced myself into using the ergonomic keyboard, which I was like, I can't do that. I'm not a touch typer. Well, it turns out I am a touch typer. I started using a Trackman pointing device. So instead of a mouse, it's a ball.
Oh, cool.
And I just use my thumb to move it around. And when I started, I was like, there's no way I can do art with this. So I'll have to keep switching to a mouse. And then pretty soon I was able to do everything I could with a mouse with that. And the only time I ever change is if I need to actually use a pen stylus and use my tablet.
I have found that a lot of the stuff that I used to, I still play guitar, just not as well because I'm still learning how to play with my braces on.
Right.
I don't have to play with the braces on, but by playing with the braces on, I play properly. So all of the chords that messed up my wrists, I can pull them off, but it took me a little while to sound differently. Like, but the learning curve isn't as steep as I think people expect it to be. Remember back in like junior high or elementary school when you're learning how to use a new tool and it's like, you know, it takes a month and you get to play around and screw up for a while. Mm-hmm. Like that's a thing that we need to, I think, do more of.
Absolutely. So well, when I first started doing it, I was like, this is so uncomfortable. This is not going to help at all. And I didn't have full blown carpal tunnel, but my wrist would get sore and I knew and the top of my hand would get sore. And I knew exactly what was causing that. And I've found that just by switching that up, I don't have my wrist problems anymore. Actually, I don't even have the ergonomic keyboard anymore because I'm working off a laptop, but I have the laptop elevated. And just having the mouse where my hand is just sitting still, I find that I'm not having to wear braces. I haven't gotten that far. My brother-in-law, he has to wear two braces. He's got special elevation for his hands because his job is completely on the computer and he doesn't have a choice. So I haven't gotten to that level. But I really think like once you start to feel a little stiffness, you need to start looking into these assistive devices. And no matter how hard they seem, you will get it.
And they're not, you don't even have to wear them all the time. Like I wear the braces more for practicing arm position than for anything else because they prevent me from moving in certain ways. So like if I actually go to an open mic with my guitar or if I, God forbid, actually play somewhere, I don't have to wear the braces for the show. It's just I now know how to play without feeling it the next day as much, which is nice.
You wear the braces for training.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's fun.
Have you looked into things for like when you're working on the computer, like when you're writing? Do you write on a computer or do you write hand?
Both. I different projects, different mindsets, different mediums.
Oh, okay. So I'm not sure if carpal tunnel even comes into like using a pen or a pencil. I know for me, I can't write for long because it just hurts my finger, you know, where that callus builds up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My handwriting got worse when I was first diagnosed with carpal tunnel, and I had to relearn handwriting, and I have traditional boy handwriting.
I think so do
so
I.
So it was already pretty bad. So now my cursive has gotten pretty good. That was actually because I started using a stylus on a tablet, and yeah. I found like with the touch recognition, the text recognition stuff on the tablet, I could somehow pull off cursive and I couldn't pull off print. So
that's really funny.
That's, I don't know. It's weird.
I know that a lot of writers, like, they're very specific about how they write. And like you said, different projects, different situations. I know one writer, he can't write with anything but a mechanical pencil on paper.
Ouch.
It has to be a pencil. Yeah.
That's so specific.
Yeah. Well, and another writer I know, it has to be a fountain pen on paper. And it has to be a fountain pen on, like, lined note paper. And then there's other people that they can handwrite or they can type into a computer. I know for me, I have to type into a computer because my writing is far too slow. I type so much faster than I can handwrite. And then, I think it was, Paulette Jackson. She wrote an entire novel using one of those tablet pens. I think it was on her HP or something. And she wrote all of The Empress Sword using handwriting recognition. And she said that it was so much faster for her because she can't get the words to come out when she's typing. Typing is work, not creative for her. And I find it so fascinating, the process that different writers use.
I have a typewriter, actually, like an old school typewriter. And there's one project I do that I've only ever written stuff I like when I'm typing on a typewriter for that project.
Oh, nice.
And it's really awkward because the typewriter's noisy, the roommates and neighbors hate it, and you know I can't lug it to Starbucks, so that project doesn't get a lot of action. But it's I find like mindset, like if I'm writing cursive, I write differently than if I'm writing print.
Mm-hmm.
Because just like I feel like, I don't know if this is actually true or if it's psychosomatic, but like the curving of the lines influence how I feel I'm talking. So like if I'm typing, I sound more analytical.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I want to be all poety, then I've got to get away from the computer myself because I feel like I'm writing a report when I'm at the computer.
Totally.
Which is sometimes fun.
That's understandable. You know, it's like they say, don't bring your work to bed with you because then you won't be able to sleep. It's the same kind of thing. If you're trying to do something creative and you're in your work setting, it's hard to be creative. For the typewriter feeling, have you tried out the Hanks typewriter keyboard?
No, I'm that.
If you have an iPad, you can get a Hanks typewriter keyboard. It was created by Tom Hanks. And what it is it has the clack of the typewriter. It's laid out and looks like a typewriter. And it can even be set so that you can't go do backspaces or anything. All you can do is go back and X things out like an old typewriter. And it doesn't have autocorrect.
There's a weird thing in the typewriter that I really find empowering, which is the constant hum of like the electrical plugged into the wall typewriter.
Oh, it's one of those typewriters. Okay.
Yeah, like we're talking like I got it at a yard sale typewriters and like putting on the old school ribbon. Like something about that smell gets me in this certain mindset.
Nice. Very nice. When I was in school, I actually used to type my reports on a typewriter. And I feel like that's why I type on my keyboard so loudly, but it was like an old manual one, the really nice electric one my sisters were able to use because they were in college, so they got the good ones. So I was using the, you know, you have to slam it in to get the keys up, and then you have to use a little bit of whiteout to get it out, or maybe
sometimes you have to pull the letters out off the page because it gets stuck if you're typing too fast.
Or they get caught on each other.
And that influences, I think, my voice when I'm playing or when I'm writing. So for me, that's a thing. What is it? I have another app that I use that I do the typewriter clacks. It's called Focusrite for Windows. And you can set the background to an image. So I have like a star background and it takes up the full screen and I have clacks. So it's a very, very specific mindset when I'm writing. And it's very different than if I'm writing like Notepad or whatever. I don't know.
Absolutely. No, I totally understand. Writing environment can be so important. I know for me, when I was writing Scrivener was fantastic for me because they have this full screen mode and I can make it look how I want and I get rid of all the other distractions and I can make the fonts however I want and it doesn't change how it will
Scrivener's
output.
Scrivener's fun.
Yeah.
I like outlining in Scrivener because I really like note cards and I always lose note cards.
Yes, so the note cards are great.
I like my outlining to feel like I'm playing a card game because the more I feel like I'm playing when I'm writing, the more fun it is.
Yeah.
I think. And that's what I've been doing so much editing that I was just kind of burnt out on writing for the past 2 years. So
that is completely understandable. So before we run out of time, you actually just reminded me, cause you said you like playing cards, Thousand White Card Game?
Oh, it's 1,000 blank cards.
That's it.
It is 1,000 blank cards. My favorite card game of all time. Yes.
Tell us about that.
All right. Basically, it's a Discordian card game. The whole point is chaos and nonsense. It is, you have a hand of cards. You make it from note cards. Usually at the start of the game, you've got like a pile of blank cards and maybe you'll draw some, maybe you'll make some. But a lot of times during play, your hand will be like half cards that have already been made and half blank stuff so you can make it up. So what you have to do is you title the card and you draw a picture and you put the rule on the card is kind of the rough format. And then on your turn, you draw a card and you play a card. Now, usually it's a point-based thing. So like, you know, let's say I draw a card and I draw a tea kettle and I say tea and biscuits, 10 points. And then I play that. Mm-hmm. Well, someone else could then come up a card, I eat your biscuits, steal someone else's biscuit card with a card with the word biscuits on it. And rapidly, depending on who you're playing with, the point values get insane. The cards get insane. Some of them get nonsensical. I was in one game where someone drew every turn they played it like a five of hearts. It's not worth 5 points. It's just a five of hearts. Every turn they played the five of hearts. And their turns were just very bizarre. And so it's kind of like if you've played Flux,
yep,
you can do that, but with less predictability and often more fun.
It sounds like Calvin Ball, the card game.
Yeah, pretty much. That's kind of the point. And at the end, what you do is if you need a victory condition, you're probably playing the wrong card game. First of all, if you need to win,
yeah.
You can have a thing where people like vote and pick out their favorite cards and those go back into the pile. So next time you've got like, if it's 1,000 cards in your little plastic baggie where you keep your note cards, you've got 500 blank ones and the 500 best cards from the last time you played.
Oh,
and so, but you probably want to do less than 1,000, you know,
yeah. So you have room to grow.
Yeah. And you have different decks. Like I wanted to, for the PG Holyfield Memorial, I kind of was hoping we would come away with one that we could use as a Balticon Memorial. I think I still have it. When I was teaching high school English, we did this with Macbeth, and people would make cards just out of what they remembered, and gradually they'd have to dig further and further into the play to try to remember what, like, things. So it was a very, very casual way of making fun of the play, but also remembering the play. Like the only rule was it's got to be Macbeth flavored. So like lots of king killing cards, lots of making fun of stuff cards. But gradually they turned into a sort of mnemonic device. So I've got this deck of cards in one of my boxes that is a what my students remember from Macbeth, basically.
Oh, that's awesome.
What they felt was important. Yeah, it's weird.
I would have to like make a card that was the spot card, which would then
yes.
say that your cards that played didn't actually play because you can't get it out.
Exactly. And that was that. And the point is to be weird and crazy and creative. Like I feel like the PG Holyfield one with the people we had, I mean, it ended up, I think, being a different sort of thing than what I was expecting. The event that I was bringing
well, and
to.
it was so many different things going on. There just wasn't time for even all the things that we had planned.
I know. And that's, I'm okay with that. Like, I'm not complaining. It's just that's a thing that, you know, next year, maybe I'll just wander around playing 1,000 blank cards with people and come away with like, you know, year 50 Balticon blank cards, whatever the people make. Cause I feel like that's a thing that is fun to do.
I agree. And next year you won't be so swamped with running of the track.
Yeah. Cause I mean, you know, I'm kind of taking it easy. Like it wasn't full, wasn't just a, like, you know, I wanted to pull back from Balticon, and I think this happened a little faster than I wanted. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's I'm actually kind of excited to have like free time and fewer commitments. So hopefully that'll result in like creative and funness. Hopefully.
Well, I have a lot of respect for all con organizers because they put so much work into it. And I remember watching Paul Fisher, who used to run the New Media Track, and it's like he does not get to enjoy the con, and he spends all year working on it. And so I feel like it's definitely something that you shouldn't do for too many years, and it's a lot more work than people realize it is.
I feel like it would really work well to like share the responsibility. Like this person's on point, and then there's these three other people who are kind of like the backups, but they get to enjoy the con and the main person doesn't. And then you swap it.
And it's pretty crazy. I mean, it's definitely something you do out of passion and love for the track, but then you end up having to suffer because you don't get to enjoy the con as much. And then of course, everything that goes wrong, people are like complaining and you're like, but I tried.
I'm like, I did that on purpose. I ruined your convention on purpose. Not really.
So it'll be really good for you to be able to really enjoy the con again.
Well, I never really get, you know, like the first year I was at Balticon was my first 2 years, I was not running the con. My third year, I had somehow, Paul Fisher was like, hey, I need to break. Can someone step in? And I was stupid enough to say, hey, sure, why not? I barely know the convention. Count me in. And so I haven't really socialized at Balticon very much in like 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
Which is so here I tried to do more, but I was still pretty busy. So it's exciting me, I think.
Yeah, I'm excited now, to see you around more.
I'm excited to be a person again, as opposed to a bureaucrat. So, I just need to make sure I have enough blank cards because that game, oh my God.
It sounds like so much fun. I'm sad that we didn't get a chance to, I didn't get to do so much that I wanted to do at Balticon this year. I was a lot busier than I even expected. And I ended up not following my own rules. I did not get enough meals a day. And I normally can fight off con crud because I've got a really healthy immune system and I follow the rules. You know, the 5-2-1, 5 hours of sleep, 2 meals a day, and a shower a day. And I was missing the meals, and that did it. That did me in. I was eating garbage. I wasn't, I didn't have my trail mix with me. I wasn't prepared. And, this Balticon, it was great, but I was pretty much run ragged in ways that I was not anticipating. Plus I was dealing with a huge emotional toll.
Yeah. Cause it was, I feel like for a lot of different reasons, it was a very complex emotional Balticon. I mean, that's the last year we're going to have the cookout at that hotel.
Yeah.
Unless we all drive out there for that hotel. So
I know people are talking about maybe doing it on the beach because at the new hotel there might be, we'll probably figure it out when we get there.
Someone else besides me will figure it out though.
Oh, absolutely.
That's something I'm excited.
That's a T and Jason thing. So we don't have to worry about that.
Other people
help, but they definitely kind of spearhead that and it makes it a lot easier. I helped Jason 1 year and that was almost a disaster, but it ended up being amazing.
I think for me, the thing that I always try to do the most at the convention is just like, if I'm peopled out, cause I'm an introvert, is go back to the room, take a moment, and enjoy the books you bought and just take a moment and relax. And that's always really, I feel very bad doing that because there's people I want to socialize with. But if I don't retreat for a little while to refill my Patrick meter, then I stop being human.
You have to do that. You have to recharge. I think we all need to do that. Like, it's really weird because I think most of the people that go to Balticon are more on the introvert scale than the extrovert scale, but you wouldn't know it because we're so comfortable with each other. But at the same time, so many of us, and we don't talk about it, but it's true, we all retreat back to our rooms. We all have to take moments for ourselves. We all have to like hide for a minute.
And it's weird because everyone seems so outgoing, like on the outside.
When it's all lies.
When first walk in, you think everyone is like this electric, these room charging people. And then they're like, yeah, but I got to go hide now. Darla posted a thing like pretending to be human on her blog recently. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like a guide to pretending to be human. And I thought that was very, very fitting for what it feels like maybe for a lot of us, which was kind of fun.
Absolutely. I agree. We like it's the weirdest thing. You know, when I tell people that I'm generally a shy person, they don't believe me because once I feel comfortable about around someone, I'm a lot more outgoing. And at Balticon, I feel very safe and I can be more outgoing and I can talk to strangers and things like that. But if I'm in a room where I don't know anyone, I'm like terrified. And people don't understand that because it seems like I'm not. And it's like, no, that's just because you know me. And we're all pretending to be human. So thank you for coming on. This has been a blast. We've actually gone a little bit longer than I planned, but that's fine because it was all great conversation. Can you tell people where they can find you? Uh-oh, did I lose you? Oh, no. Hello. Well, people can find Patrick at thousandheads.com and you can find all of his projects there. I will put a link in the show notes and you can find that at nimlas.org. Thanks so much. Stay cool, everyone. Bye.
For the very best in old school wrestling talk and interviews, it's World Domination with Terry Garvin Sims. Every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, former pro wrestler Terry Sims, a.k.a. Terrence the Beauty Garvin, welcomes wrestling greats of the 80s and 90s for a hard-hitting, no-holds-barred look at the life and times of pro wrestling before it became sports entertainment. Among the guests who've appeared on the show are superstar Bill Dundee, former WWE star The Patriot Del Wilkes, and New York Times best-selling author and WWE Hall of Famer Mick Foley. If you love old school wrestling, you'll enjoy listening to World Domination with Terry Garvin Sims every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern. Find us at www.blogtalkradio.com/randombrainactivity. World Domination with Terry Garvin Sims.
Taking over the world, one radio show at a time.
Nutty Bites is produced at Nimlas Studios. You can find us on the web at nimlasstudios.org. This work is created under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 Unported International License. What that means is you can share it, you can send it to your friends, you just can't make any money off of it, you can't change it, and you have to link back to me, my site, and everything. You can comment and send feedback by going to nimlas.org/nuttybites. You can go to facebook.com/group/nuttybites. You can call the comment line by going to 347-NUTTY42, or you can find me on Twitter, you can search on Google+, you can search the web, you can find me everywhere.